We're not here to talk about weather. We're here to talk about the joy of joys, Rutgers and St. John's basketball. Two teams that have, well, they didn't win yesterday. It's January 5th. It's Sunday. You've got Dave and Norman back on the air, and we are happy to talk all sorts of things about hoops today.
Yep, we're ready to go, and conference season is here, so college basketball gets exciting.
So first, I think I'll start with St. John's, because I think that became a lot more of a national story yesterday.
Yeah, what happened? I didn't see the game. What happened?
St. John's stunk. There's not a way to sugarcoat what happened out there. Going down 42-16 at the end of the first half, after, as one person called it, a circus shot by Sir Don Pointer to get to 16, that's a little embarrassing. I mean, Georgetown's a good team, but they're not Kansas. They're not Duke. They're not Kentucky. This year, they're, you know, kind of just a set of guys. You know, they might make the NCAAs, they might not. St. John's prediction was based on the idea that they had so much talent. How could they not be good? But then the way that the talent hadn't come together kind of dropped them down to fifth. Meanwhile, right. Villanova, who finished better than St. John's last year, worked over St. John's a couple of times, and didn't really lose much. They were considered to be fourth. I'm not really sure why. So Villanova's really exploded, and we'll talk about them in a little bit, too, with our guest Chris Lane, if we can get him on. And okay. St. John's is really, I wouldn't say imploded. I think that, and we'll get to this again later, I do think that, you know, there's a little bit too much narrativing going on. But St. John's has not had a good couple of games. To wit, yes, they had a better second half, and Steve Lavin talked about that second half in his post-game conversation. But in the first half, they shot 26% from the two, I think 22% from the field, because they also went 0-for-5 on threes.
Oh.
I mean, it was next level bad. I think they crossed 10 points with, like, you know, 7 minutes left in the first half. They couldn't do anything right. They had 9 turnovers. There was jump shot after jump shot. They couldn't get to the rim. They blew layups. They blew dunks. They just had no clue. And meanwhile, on the other side, Devontae Smith-Rivera dropped, I think it was 20 points on them in the first half. He'd really stunk against St. John's in the past. So it was kind of strange to watch him just easily, you know, just take shots. Even, you know, Bill Raftery almost sounded like a fan, really. You know, at one point he says, "How do you go under that screen?" right before Smith Rivera cans a jump shot when Rashid Jordan went under a screen. It was just they were unprepared, and they said that they were unprepared afterwards. And that's worrisome.
That's worrisome on a lot of levels, because they're mostly, besides Jordan, juniors and seniors.
Yeah.
Well, juniors.
Juniors,
yeah. And they have someone who should be a solid coach, you know, and that's what's worrisome.
Who's recruited his own guys. There's no, yeah. These aren't my guys issue. There is no, oh, they're young. That young team issue is, I've always thought of it as a little bit of crap, you know. There's certain things that are endemic to youth, mm-hmm. but if there are basics that just aren't working, that's not youth. That's an issue of teaching. But you know.
What's frightening is he so far has done better with not his guys as opposed to his guys.
Yeah.
You know, that first year he was there, he took a bunch of kids that just wanted to win, you know, were talented, and got them to really play together, which they hadn't done under the previous coach.
Yeah. We'll come back around to this with our listener question as well.
Oh, listener questions. This is crazy.
Yeah, we've got a couple of listener questions this time, which is very exciting.
New year, new features.
Yeah, we're turning it up. so, yeah, we'll go back to that. So tell me a little bit about Rutgers and what's going on over there and their almost win against Louisville, or their moral victory against Louisville.
Yeah, we're going moral victory. After the way the out-of-conference season went, with as we recap, losses to William and Mary and Fairleigh Dickinson. I think since we last recorded a podcast, they needed a 3-pointer from Miles Mack with 3 seconds left to beat Army, of all teams. And then they had a week off, and or the holiday. They had actually like a week and a half off. And they came back and they beat Temple, which was impressive, because Temple's really well coached, and they got Quentin DiCozy to go off. You know, he scored 25
points. He had, like, what, 15 points in the first half?
17 in the first half and 25 within, you know, with 15 minutes left in the game.
And more impressively, I do think that Rutgers actually hung tough late in the game when the game got very tight. I think they made some very good plays.
Yeah, and one of the problems, you know, they had in the at a conference was when they got down, they didn't run plays. We've talked a lot about the hero ball that they started playing, and they really ran their sets against Temple, and they won, which brought in Louisville, you know, defending national champions, top 15 team.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. In the past 8 years, Rutgers' closest loss was a 12-point loss. I think they averaged Louisville beat Rutgers by an average of like 19 points in that time span. You know, just never a good matchup for the Scarlet Knights. And Rutgers came out yesterday and they ran their sets when they could. They jumped out to a 9-2 and a 12-4 lead. They played some really solid defense, but at the end of the first half, you know, Seegers was hurt. He has a twisted ankle. Devon Campbell against Louisville's press looked like he'd never seen a press before. And it was just turnover central, and Louisville was able to turn that into a 6-point halftime lead, which they then extended to about 17 at one point in the second half. And Jordan was actually forced to play Seegers, which he didn't want to do because he needed another ball handler. And Seegers played well. He you know, he didn't have any turnovers in the second half, and Rutgers battled back. They got to within 6, and they hung around. They ended up losing by 7, and they didn't, again, they didn't panic. They ran their sets. They just had so much trouble with the press, and Louisville, which is usually a 65% free throw shooting team, shot something like 90% from the line and made more free throws than Rutgers shot. So it was that kind of game, but it was one of those games where you never felt like they were always that one shot away from really being back in it. Mm-hmm. You know, they'd have possession down 4, 7 or 6, and, you know, a 2 or 3 there really gets the crowd rocking and, you know, you have a chance. But they were never out of it either. So you got to look at it as a moral victory just because it seems like the team is finally buying in. They're coming together. Miles Mack is turning into a force.
Yeah.
In this offense, Junior E2 and, of all people, Craig Brown have really come alive. Brown scored 17 yesterday. So,
my God.
Yeah,
that just struck me. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, exactly. He hit, I think Rutgers only made 4 threes. He hit 2 of them. He got to the basket. He got to the line. Did everything right. Really played tough basketball. And seems to be adjusting to that, you know, from JUCO to Division I, you know, basketball. Mm. And it's you hate to have moral victories, but with the way they looked, you know, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, you take it. And they have another week off to keep working to get everybody healthy, and let's see what happens.
Nice.
You know, right. Cincinnati on the road is the next.
When is that game?
Next Saturday.
Okay, yeah, St. John's is up next Saturday against Villanova. And I suppose, speaking of Villanova, we're going to try and add Chris Lane to this call, and let's see what happens. Now on Not Half Bad, we have our actually first guest ever, Chris Lane of VU Hoops. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm good, just shaking off the cobwebs from Saturday night.
Cobwebs? Cobwebs?
Can't understand that.
I didn't go out on Saturday night. I'm socked in by snow here in Chicago.
Yeah, we're mostly melting right now in New York, so I think it's back to normal pretty much.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So we've been talking a little bit about St. John's and Rutgers' Rutgers' moral victory.
Yay!
And St. John's' amoral loss, I guess. And I guess first, let's talk a little bit about Villanova, who will be St. John's next opponent, and what good basketball looks like. Tell us about this. What is this good basketball?
It's a surprise for us, too, I think. I mean, you guys know last year we were a little up and down. We had a tough run there for a couple of years, got back to the tournament. And I think everybody, you know, felt pretty good about the team coming into the season, all the returning parts. But, you know, the number one thing I think for us this year is that our defense has just been outstanding. We really only had a couple of games where I think I've been, you know, holding my hands, you know, into my face, really can't even watch. And Syracuse was the best example of that. They just ran over us in the second half of that game. Yeah. But, you know, I think the defense, the intensity of the defense, the experience of players like Hilliard, of players like Bell has really allowed us to use that as our baseline to really get into attack, get out and run more this year. And then the other component of that, I think, is just the depth of the team, which, you know, last year, Jay Wright, you know, historically will shorten his bench and only play really 6 to 7 players throughout the game. And this year he's had 9 that he's really not hesitated to go to. Players like Josh Hart, Chris Jenkins coming in as freshmen and really stepping up and playing like experienced, you know, upperclassmen has really allowed the team to thrive and not burn out and really run opponents into the ground.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about Hart and Jenkins and what they bring to the team?
Yeah, so, you know, Hart, I think, really prototypical Villanova player, really good on defense, pretty athletic, gets out in transition and runs well. And then he's really shown the ability, I think, to just step up and take a shot. He's not, you know, shied away. He's not deferring to teammates. When he's open or when he's got an alley to the hoop, he's going to go and take it. And we've loved that about him. So he, you know, he really provides a lot of energy. He's one of the first guys off the bench. And, you know, like I said, playing like an upperclassman, I think it's giving him that confidence to go out and continue to do that night after night. So he, you know, he's on the path, I think, right now to be one of the front runners for rookie of the year if he can keep it up, which is probably asking a lot over a 30 game season of him. But, you know, he hasn't really showed signs of slowing down yet. And then Jenkins, you know, we didn't know what we were going to get with him coming in other than the good outside shooting. But, you know, he's given us, I think, a player that we can plug in when we need him. So whether it's down low on the block, spelling Pinkston and Oshefu, or whether it's just coming in, playing on the perimeter, keep the ball moving and hit the open shot. You know, his minutes have been going pretty up and down from game to game, but I don't think that he's really ever shied away from taking the big shot either. So it's nice to have players that, you know, can come in and they're successful early and it helps their confidence grow.
So what about the returnees? It seems that James Bell has made what seems to be a leap, or at least in the national media. You know, I've read a couple of things about James Bell making a step up. Who's changed among the returnees?
Yeah, Bell's the best example, right? I mean, he was averaging, you know, a few points, you know, really a handful of points per game last year. He's up around 16 or 17 this year. You know, he's a little bit of a volume scorer. I think, you know, he requires a lot of shots. He's not afraid as a senior to launch 6 to 7 threes a game, and he'll get his. But, you know, other than that, I think that Pinkston and Hilliard have really been the key cogs of the team this year. Hilliard has been filling up the stat sheet left and right, whether it's assists, rebounds, points. You know, he's one of the better players I can remember for his size anyway, being able to get to the hoop really whenever he wants. And usually you see smaller, quicker guards be able to do that. Players like, you know, Bryce Cotton or, you know, other players like that. But he's been really good at doing that, drawing fouls and being able to be the guy that when Villanova needs a bucket or needs to get to the free throw line and get some points, he's been able to do that. And then, you know, Pinkston has been pretty consistent. I don't think his points have jumped through the roof this year, but, you know, for a team that is mostly built around guards and perimeter players, he's been kind of that undersized, you know, beast really in the middle for us, where against Butler, I think, was the best example of it. You know, they didn't really have anyone on that team that was quick enough to really defend him on that low block, and he had his way the entire game. So the two of them and then Bell, I think, have been the three mainstays. And then, you know, players like Archie Diacono, I think he's still getting his feet settled this year. He's in a little bit of a different role out of that scoring role. So, you know, I think once we get clicking on all cylinders, that's what we're all really looking forward to, because we haven't really had one of those games yet where, you know, 4 or 5 players have really all been on yet. It's usually 1 or 2 of those guys carrying the team.
Well, if St. John's keeps up their current level of play, I think next Saturday you might have that game in the Garden.
Yeah, I'm unfortunately going to be out of town for that. I was looking forward to attending that, but yeah, I don't know what's going on with you guys this year. It's there's so much talent on the floor, and it almost feels like, you know, Villanova from a couple of years ago when we had, you know, Dominic Cheek, Malik Waynes, really talented guys that, you know, just aren't playing as a cohesive unit for some reason.
And that year, wasn't kind of the undercurrent story was that there were just guys with different priorities, that, you know, Cheek and maybe other guys were thinking a little bit more of the professional ranks than they were thinking of being good on the court for Villanova?
Yeah, you know, I don't want to speak for them because, you know, I don't really know. But I know, I think Cheek had some family issues and he really needed to, you know, start earning money and providing for his family. And so he, you know, I think he would even say now he bolted probably before he was ready for the pros. But he's doing pretty well in Europe and he's, you know, consistently had a team to play for. So I'm happy for him there. And then Wayne's, you know, we go back and forth. I think there's a lot of venom from our fan base on those two guys. But, you know, Wayne's I always thought was a great team player. He came up, you know, with some of the better Villanova teams. And I think he was just kind of wrong place, wrong time. He, you know, he's a very good point guard, very good off the dribble, very good at getting teammates involved. And he was asked to be a 20-point-a-game guy for Villanova. So he was launching probably way more shots than he was even comfortable with. And that just led to, you know, people seeing him and remembering him as, I think, a worse basketball player than he actually was.
Mm-hmm. He wasn't bad. I mean, it's not, you know, comparing that to St. John's right now, St. John's seems to have the problem where Steve Lavin continually is saying things about how the team isn't sustaining two good halves, or they played, you know, 16 of their best minutes against Syracuse weeks ago. Against Xavier, oh, the first half was good. It wasn't actually that good. You know, against Georgetown, the second half was good. And, you know, it seems like that there's, you know, I don't want to make that comparison between that narrative of, you know, guys like Waynes and Cheek who are thinking of the pros, because St. John's, yes, has guys like Samson, possibly Harrison, Chris Obekpa, who are thinking of the next level. But there seems to be something deeper than that going on with St. John's. You know, a really real issue of their ability to sustain effort and physicality, as Steve Lavin would say.
Right, yeah. And sometimes it is just between the ears. You know, Jay Wright's talked a lot about, you know, only recruiting guys that he knows are going to really go hard for the entire time they're on the floor. And they're not concerned about their stat line. They're not concerned about, you know, any personal gain, you know, or down the line in the NBA. But they're really concerned about, you know, that night, the team, and playing for the win. And, you know, I actually think, you know, we've had a big debate on the blog about this lately, about, you know, whether we should be trying to recruit, you know, these five-star, one-and-done potential guys. And people on the blog will say, well, you can't win a championship if you don't have that star player, that Jabari Parker or that, you know, Derrick Rose type of character. But
that's not the only kind of,
you know,
star.
I think Butler's proved the last couple of years they've gone to the title game with a collection of just good, solid basketball players. And, you know, I think I, for one, am happy that Villanova's got a little bit back to, you know, that root of maybe these underrated guys coming out of high school that, you know they can play, you know they'll fit your system, and they're going to work their ass off every night.
I always thought that.
Right.
I'm sorry. I just thought that the conversation was always about having a certain number of pros on your team to win a championship. And I think that the idea that you need a one-and-done pro, that's not necessarily true. I mean, you could have a three-and-done pro and go to a championship game. Just saying.
Yeah, no. Agreed.
You talked a little bit about the defenses here, and it always struck me. I love the way Jay Wright uses that trapping press and – you know, I haven't watched Villanova enough to know. Does he use that just to slow the other team down, or is he looking for turnovers and getting out and running?
Yeah, you know what? That three-quarter court press this year has worked a lot better than it has in the past. I think in the past it was used to, you know, really get a team out of its offensive rhythm, you know, really only give them maybe 25 seconds on the shot clock instead of 35 and you know, hope that it gets them out of balance. But, you know, this year he's got some more upperclassmen. Hilliard's been great at the top of that press where we actually are generating turnovers off of it. And I think that Wright realizes that now he has nine guys that he can go to. You know, he's got a lot of horses in the stable and he can press all game long and run and get easy points, where as in years past, I think it was a little bit of a shorter bench and a lot more inexperience on the court. And, you know, that trapping press, a lot of fans were calling it for just to, you know, get rid of it, put it in the grave, because good teams actually know how to break that pretty easily. And we saw against teams like Iowa that, you know, they're kind of like us. They've got, you know, 8-9 really good players that are smart and experienced, and they know how to break those presses and get easy points. When you get teams that are a little experienced or short in the backcourt, that's when we really see it work.
I'm looking at the stats, and it seems that Villanova's extremely good at stopping two-point shots. 17th in the country, opponents are shooting 41.7% against the Villanova defense. How do you do that without shot blocking?
Well, it's been Wright's philosophy, which, you know, I think goes against all the traditional math where, you know, we've been debating it recently. 3-point shots are more valuable than 2-point shots when you talk about, you know, efficiency and all that. But, you know, Wright, he's always leaned more to protecting the paint, owning the glass, owning those easy shots, and not letting people have free layups and free little bunnies in the lane. But, you know, the counterpoint of that, if you sag that much and you really are trying to protect that paint, especially with undersized players, you leave open that drive and kick. And against good shooting teams, we've been scorched horribly, which, you know, really makes me worry about facing teams like Creighton, which that's their entire game is inside out. So, you know, it has its values. I definitely think, you know, it helped against teams like Kansas that are a lot bigger than us. But when you get a hot shooting team or a really good shooting team, you can get burned that way.
So, Chris, Big East, how are your feelings on the conference so far, how it started, the first couple of conference games?
You know, I think it's been a pretty good start this year. I like that the new programs, you know, Xavier's done really well since they had that flop in Atlantis. I like that, you know, Creighton with McDermott is still getting it done. And, you know, even Butler, I think, is a lot better than people thought they were going to be. I think the downside is that, you know, the traditional programs, the ones that have been there for a while, St. John's, Georgetown, Marquette, are having, you know, probably more down years than people expected so far. So, it's been a little bit of a mixed bag, but I do like the new teams that are in there. And I think that the parity is going to be pretty high this year. I think, you know, St. John's is better than they're playing. So is Georgetown. So is Marquette. And so there's going to be some upsets this year. And I don't think that, you know, Villanova or Creighton or Xavier is going to run train on the conference and win this thing by a couple of games at the end of the year. I think it's going to come down to the wire.
Can you trash talk Seton Hall a little bit for me?
I feel so bad for Seton Hall. It's tough. I've never seen a team just with so many injuries and so much, you know, bad stuff happen to them, you know, so early in the season. Maybe Providence is another one this year, but, you know, it was a lot easier to talk trash on Seton Hall when Bobby Gonzalez was the coach there still, yeah, versus and all that. But, you know, I think that it's tough for them. They're in a weird spot. I think, you know, St. John's traditional New York City team, it, you know, cleans up in recruiting in that area. And then, you know, even Rutgers, it seems, just has better resources. You know, they've got the new coach. They've got, you know, I think better probably fan support too. And so Seton Hall is kind of this third man out in that Northeast corner. And it makes me shocked at how they're pulling in that recruiting class next year. I know, you know, he's bringing some high school assistants on board and all that, but, I have no idea how that's happening, because they're definitely number three in my mind in terms of power in that region.
Thank you. That was perfect.
We're just going to look the other way and hope that they're competent next year, I suppose.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, that's it. What am I doing? I'm writing about St. John's. I can't really talk trash, right? Seton Hall is a fine program. See, there we go.
Right, exactly.
That's all I can say.
Show the company line.
Yeah. You have any questions for us? You want to know, you know, the Rutgers thing?
Yeah. No, how's Rutgers doing in the, what is it, the AAC this year? I mean, how's that going? Are you guys, you know, you guys are in the AAC? Are you at the Big Ten yet? Like, what's that transition looking
like? They're even
on TV. Yeah, we're on TV. Now, the Big Ten's coming next year.
Okay.
Jordan really kind of, you know, after all the Mike Rice stuff, and the reason I asked about Hart and Jenkins was because I know before all the Rice stuff came out, Rice was really hot after those two kids. Mm-hmm. And all the transfers, Jordan really had to kind of pull a team together of, you know, not leftovers. He actually got some good players and transfers and stuff like that. But they had a really rough out-of-conference season. They lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. They lost to William and Mary. But the last two games, they're 1-1. We were just talking about it. They're 1-1. They beat Temple, and they kind of hung with Louisville. I hate to say they hung with Louisville, but they lost by 7. Kind of never gave up. They were down 17. Battled back. Mm-hmm. So they're starting to play a little better. It's really going to come down to how Jordan, you know, coming from the NBA, can recruit over the next couple years. Right. So. He got Whittington from Georgetown to transfer, and hopefully he'll be available next year. But it's too early to tell.
Yeah. No, I hear you. Well, I mean, that's good for you guys. I'm happy you guys are in the Big Ten. That's a good step up for the program. I mean, and that basketball conference has just exploded recently. So
yeah,
it's almost going to be like the old Big East. You guys are kind of going from one tough conference to another.
Yeah, you're just hoping they use the money, not they don't dump all the money into the football program and they save some for basketball, because our facilities are just, you know, if you've ever been to the rack, it needs some upgrading. It's very old school.
So yeah.
That's kind of weird.
We called it the dump because I've apparently made myself an infamous superstar on our blog for calling our pavilion the dump. which is copyrighted by a couple of blog members.
Nice, nice. No, I have not called it the dump. I kind of like the rack, but I remember the old days when, you know, it got really loud. So
yeah, I went to a Villanova Rutgers game a few years ago, and it was pretty wild in there. I think we squeaked one out at the end, but yeah, it's pretty vicious in there. And I actually kind of like those old timey arenas a little bit. I mean, they need a facelift, especially when you're competing with, you know, these big state universities that are throwing millions, you know, tens of millions of dollars into renovations every 5 years. So, you know, I'm right there with you. We need the overhaul too.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just hoping they use some of that money. But you know, they're paying off Mike Rice, they're paying off Pernetti, and it's just kind of a lot of transition right now. So we'll see.
Maybe
it's
going to take years.
Yeah. And what's going on with St. John's? You guys have a bunch of guys graduating, right? And you don't have any recruits coming in next year?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Yes, it is. Yeah, there's a sort of you know, there's a conversation that's not really being had about the recruiting because there's just nothing to be said. And, you know, and I think we all know how recruiting and recruiting information goes, that the coaches can't say anything about the players that they're recruiting, but you know when certain journalists have an information all of a sudden about so-and-so being interested in St. John's or St. John's being interested in somebody, you know that information is fed by the program, right? Yeah. So there's been nothing. I mean, it's been crickets. Occasional mentions of Adonis De La Rosa, who apparently is getting some interest now from Georgetown. He's a big man out of Christ the King. He's 6'10", quote-unquote 250 pounds, let's say 300. He's a big man. And that's pretty much it that's on the radar for next year. Nobody's been signed. You don't really hear a lot about the team being out there. I heard that, you know, the staff might have been down at, or some of the staff might have been down at the City of Palms Classic a few weeks ago. But, you know, nothing came out of that either. So, yeah, there's a little bit of worry. You know, it's not a lot of, there aren't a lot of guys or a lot of major contributors graduating next year. There's just Marco Borgo, God's Gift to Chua, and Orlando Sanchez. And Sanchez would be the only main contributor. That said, that's a real hit to your big man depth with only Christian Jones coming back off of a red shirt.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's quiet. I guess maybe they'll dip into the JUCO ranks and they're looking more towards 2015. But, you know, one likes to have a few more players in the pipeline, you know, guys who can grow and develop, guys who know the system before you go and get the, you know, the freshmen, guys like Isaiah Briscoe, who you just say, all right, go out there and do your thing. Those guys are great, but you like to have some experience around them.
I'm hoping Jordan lands Briscoe, so stay away from him.
No.
Yeah, I've given up on Briscoe with Villanova. That's just not happening for us.
Yeah, but that's okay. I mean, I think Jay Wright at least seems to have a solid plan, and he seems to be in on. Don't you guys have? Aren't there a couple of good recruits that are coming next year for Villanova?
Yeah, we're pretty solid next year. I think we've got McCall Bridges and Phil Booth both signed. You know, Booth's a combo guard. He's pretty similar, I think, to Archie Diacono. You know, he can play the one or the two. He's got a good outside shot, and he's pretty much known for his defense. So we're all really excited about him. And then McCall Bridges is a local kid from. Chester County, I think, that, you know, plays in the public leagues outside of Philadelphia. So he was a little under the radar, you know, and not really involved in the Catholic League downtown. But I think he's like 6'6", 6'7", you know, pretty good height, a little lanky, can shoot the three, can get inside, block. So we're happy about him, too. And then the odd part is we're thinking we're set for 2015, too, with a couple of recruits. We just got Dante DiVincenzo just committed yesterday, and then we have a big man, Tim Delaney from New Jersey, too, that's about 6'9". So, yeah, it's, you know, our fans love the recruiting thing. They love talking about it. Those are usually our most popular articles, and we're pretty much set for the next 2 years, so we don't know what the hell we're going to write about now.
Well, you'll just be able to talk about their actual games, you know, guys who are actually locked down.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
People love talking about that, too.
Yeah. You know, I love the in-game stuff is always funny when people are watching the game. The ranting and raving and people screaming for calling timeouts while we've got a 10-point lead is just fantastic.
I went to the Xavier game on New Year's Eve, and behind me, I was positioned a little bit upwards of the main media area. And behind me, there was a fellow who decided to come over to the area where I was as a, you know, credentialed and all. And he was just going, he was having a mental apocalypse about Xavier's late inability to have fouls drawn by St. John's. He's like, get him, get the ball over half court, call a timeout. I was like, my God, you guys have been kicking the crap out of St. John's all game. Chill. Also, I'm writing. Chill. Such is life.
Yep.
All right. So I think, Chris, we will let you go about your Sunday morning as Dave and I go back and cry about our less capable basketball teams.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for having me on, guys. Pleasure. And let me know next time you're doing it. If you ever want me to come on and talk Big East or just hoops in general, be happy to do it again. This was fun.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you for coming on.
Yep.
No, that was great having Chris on. You know, something about Villanova, I always feel like I should hate them. I mean, they stole Jay Wright from Rutgers back in 2000, and you know, they're always tough and always beat us, but I just really like them. I always root for them. You know, I remember when Jonathan Mitchell hit the three-pointer and got fouled. I don't know if you remember that game from a couple of years ago. Mm-mm. In Rice's first year.
Yeah.
I just remember Jay Wright clapping for Jonathan Mitchell and yelling out big time, and I just thought that was really classy. So I always root for Villanova.
He's a classy dude. Yeah, I mean, I can't hate on them, you know, even though they're in Philadelphia, you know, or outside of Philadelphia. I can't hate on them.
But I think it's fan question time.
Yes. Shall we start let's start with the Rutgers question, because the St. John's question is deeper.
Yeah, this is, I think, a pretty good question, but a pretty easier one to answer. It comes from Scott Wasserman on Twitter. And he says, with Seagear's hurt, you know, his ankle injury, is there any idea why Kerwin Okoro isn't getting any minutes? And I think, judging by what Eddie Jordan's had to say, you know, Kerwin is still recovering from a knee injury. He hasn't practiced, so he's a little behind, you know, with the sets they're putting in and the defense. So I think he got a couple two against Temple, you know, off the bench at the end of the half, just to, I think, get his feet wet. But I think Jordan's a little hesitant of just throwing him in there. He's the kind of kid, apparently, that's not going to be an offensive superstar. You know, he's going to play defense, so Rutgers could use him, but I just think he's still hurt and a little behind. So.
But what year is Okoro? I mean, he's been around.
He's a sophomore.
Okay, he's not a freshman, though. He's not a guy that, I don't know, it does seem weird that you'd need to protect him like that, you know, and not give him a few minutes here and there.
Well, I mean, he's a sophomore. He's the one who transferred, and they had to get the waiver
for.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know 100% what's going on. I haven't heard anything. I can only go on what I read. And it just seems like he's a little behind. Who knows?
All right. Now for the St. John's question, a listener named Dan reached out on our email, nothalfbadpod@gmail.com, where we will
email us.
Email us. We love your questions. and I'll read response. He says, I hope some of my questions get answered on the podcast, and I hope they do too. Keep up with the good work. I always enjoyed the podcasts. Aww. Anyways, I have a few questions. Is Coach Lavin anywhere near the hot seat right now? To the dismay of many St. John's fans, is this team really a middle-of-the-pack team like the experts predicted? Finally, is the current record right now what you personally were expecting at this point in the season? I can answer these questions. First, Coach Lavin in the hot seat? I really don't think so. There's been nothing that leads me to believe that he's anywhere near the hot seat, and I think that would be a little ridiculous for St. John's to want to give him the straight-up boot after 4 years, or three if you consider his cancer-shortened year a non-year. But after 4 years, and with the level of recruiting he's had, I think that he not quite gets a pass. But even if he gets the side eye, I think that he has a couple more years to bring in the next class and then see what he starts doing with them. And in the middle of that, if the team is still mediocre, if they haven't made the NCAA since 2011, yeah, I think then there's a real question of whether St. John's wants to start eating some money and letting Lavin go.
So, if I could just jump in real quick, I think the question is, if you let him go, who are you going to go out and get? You know what I mean? I mean, there's always somebody out there, but Lavin's a big name for St. John's.
Kind of and kind of not. I mean, I think, yes, Lavin is a big name. And I think that there's a perception issue that would then dog St. John's about being perhaps a little, wanting expectations to be a little higher than they maybe should be. And I'll swing back around to that in a second too. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there are other guys and other guys who would fit that you could go out and get. You know, there are a lot of guys in the Northeast, the Hurleys, if they're down, Masiello at Manhattan, Tim Clueis, I suppose, but his teams don't play any defense. My God, please, no, never, never. I'm sorry, that just came out. I like entertainment as much as the next guy, but come on.
You want to win.
You know? I think there's never an end. It's never the end of the world. You know, when people say, oh, the program is done, that's never true. There's always something else, you know? If the University of New Orleans can come back from deciding to be Division III and come back to Division I, anything can happen.
It's true.
So that's that one question. No, Lavin's not on the hot seat. But, you know, fans are dissatisfied. I don't know that the administration's dissatisfied. And there's a lot of money that goes into bringing in Lavin. And, you know, that's a different question there, too. Mm-hmm. The second question, is the team really a middle-of-the-pack team like experts predicted? Yes. Yes. I mean, they've kind of been – it's kind of what one should have expected, I think, going into the season. I think they have potential. They have potential to be a top two, top three team. But there's nothing in last year's way of going about playing the game or this year's way of going about playing the game that makes me think that they have the ability to mount a coherent offense for long enough to become that second team in the Big East or the first team in the Big East. It's just not quite there. I think their
ranking is directly proportional to their shot selection.
Yes. Yeah, their shot selection, if it continues like this, it's just not good. Ken Pomeroy yesterday made a comment that a number of St. John's fans had retweeted. Ken Pomeroy, the man who runs Ken Pom, the leading stats site out there. And his comment was something to the effect of, when people say that St. John's is really talented, isn't that just a code word for athleticism? And it's true. Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm. And that's what people talk about when they talk about St. John's, the raw athleticism. And people would never say that Creighton is actually a more talented team, but they are. Creighton makes mm-hmm. basketball plays. Creighton plays under control. They get to the right spots. They know the shots they need to take. And then they make them with some decent efficiency. And that's basketball.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, St. John's has potential to be better. And when they're running, they're great. But when they're not running, you know, so every team is going to find a way to slow you down at some point. And St. Yeah. John's has to figure out what to do when teams slow them down, when they zone them up, when they give them that mid-range or that 19-foot or that 18-foot jump shot. That's not a shot you have to take, especially with 18 seconds left on the shot clock.
Yep, I agree.
So, and then the last question, finally, is the current record what you were expecting at this point of the season? I don't know. That I didn't really think ahead to what the actual record would be at each point. I think this isn't unreasonable. I think the way that St. John's has gotten to 9-5 is worrisome. It's mm-hmm. it's a lot less about the actual record, I think. You have a St. John's team that just they look lost for full halves of the game. And that's really hard to watch, I think, for fans and for the national media. I mean, the kind of embarrassing halves that they put together are they're just painful, you know?
Well, let me ask you, because I really haven't seen them these past two games. Does St. John's look lost or do they look disinterested? I think that's two different things.
See, here's an interesting question. And some of Lavin's quotes, and I'll read you some of them to bolster this point. Some of Lavin's quotes are curious and worrisome because I don't think the team looks disinterested exactly, mm-hmm. maybe a little dispirited at times when they get down. You know, that's more a question of, honestly, that bounce back or quote-unquote fortitude. I think that you have to have the ability to take a punch and say, okay, that was a punch. Now what am I going to do next? Instead of just ruminating on how the punch felt. Right. And it seems like when St. John's gets down, you know, you do see some heads hang, you do see some frustration, but I don't think they're still in it. They just kind of look confused. Up against the extended press that Georgetown has played for much of the season, they just did not have a good plan to break it. And there were times where even when they did break it, where, you know, your first thought was, I'm pretty sure that in basic basketball, you're supposed to send some guy back to help out the guy who's being pressed and trapped in the backcourt. But, you know, there are just moments where guys aren't recognizing what's going on the court, and I'm not really sure what that's all about. On defense, when they're getting back on defense, they're running kind of the same spot to protect the rim, but not picking up, you know, dangerous shooters in transition. Things like that where you're a little worried about, maybe a little bit about their preparation and about where their heads are at, because it might not just be the preparation. It might just be your ability to say, okay, let me not freak out. Let me stop and say, okay, I need to be here. You know, I know that Chris Obekpa is going to go back here, so I need to be here. Of interest, then, is the idea that Steve Lavin shook up the starting lineup yesterday against a very large team. He, instead of starting guys like God's Gift to Chua and Jakar Sampson, who he'd started against Xavier's big squad, he decided to put out Felix Balamu, who up until a few weeks ago was going to redshirt this year and is not an offensive player. He's about 6'4". He's got a lot of leaping ability, but, you know, he's not a big man. He started Sir Dominic Poynter, who's probably been the team's best two-way player, but hasn't started this year. He started D'Angelo Harrison and Orlando Sanchez, and he started Kadeem Njai. You know who that is?
Oh, no, I have no idea who that is. I thought you said Kadeem Jack. That's what threw me off.
No. No, Kadeem Njai, yeah.
No idea. I didn't know even Felix Balamu.
Uh-huh, see, there you go. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about guys who have never played. Njai is a walk-on from Queens. He played at Christ the King and was at Chestnut Hill College, a Division II school, up until, I guess, 2 years ago, came on the squad. And, you know, he's athletic. He seems like a fine player. He hit a jump shot and took a charge. But there's no reason to start him in, you know, a major game. And again, it's kind of a must win. In response to putting him in, he said, against Xavier in the second half, we were really bad. So the starting lineup today was really more because of how poorly we played against Xavier. And also, you know, I just had a good premonition about Kadeem, Njai, that is. He's a kid who works really hard, lives in the gym, and I watch him every day at practice and does exactly what he did for us tonight. Hits open shots, and he rotates and takes charges and distributes the ball to the open man. And is coachable and adds value as a teammate and has a certain maturity or bearing that's impressive, gravitas, or whatever you want to call it.
Whoa, that's called sending a message to somebody.
I felt I just wanted to give him a look, and we didn't take care of the basketball early. What the hell was that?
Oh, you know, who's he angry at?
Well, let's see. There's Jakar Sampson. There's some combination of Phil Green and Raishu Jordan. Who am I missing? Who are the other starters?
Yeah, I mean, did Harrison start?
Harrison did start, and so did Orlando Sanchez. So, okay. You know, and maybe Obekpa, because Obekpa also hasn't been in the starting lineup. But wow, that's an interesting quote. And you know, it's great that you can be a teacher coach who, you know, wants to impress the importance of adding value as a teammate, having maturity, being coachable. But, okay.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that makes you go, what's going on back there anyway?
Yeah.
What? Yes. So, yeah, that's out there that, you know, obviously he's frustrated with somebody or some bodies in the program. You know, watching the games closely, you'll definitely see some players who just have real mental lapses. But then, right. You know, for my tastes and for most people's tastes, I think, the shots that guys like Jakar Sampson take they're just not good shots. But I think they're encouraged, so I don't know if that's who he's pissed at.
But wow, this was an epic episode of Not Half the Bad coming back from winter break.
Yep.
Just lots going on. Rutgers has Cincinnati on Saturday. They just blew out Memphis by like 16 or 17. So it's on the road. It's not an easy matchup for the Scarlet Knights.
Now, to be fair, Memphis, much like St. John's, I think some of their losses look worse than they really are because of the style that they play and what they do when they get down. You know, they try to just throw everybody at the rim and see what happens, and the other team gets runouts and whatever, right?
Yeah.
That's neat. That said, that's pretty impressive by Cincinnati.
Yeah, I didn't see the game. I just saw the score. So, rude awakening for Memphis playing, you know, real teams in conference, not Conference USA teams. And it's a challenge for Rutgers, I think, at this point, the way the out-of-conference went and stuff. You just want to see them keep playing well, getting better, not panicking. And you want to be in the game. I'm lowering my expectations.
Good, good. St. John's has Villanova at the Garden next Saturday at 1 p.m. And it'll be interesting to see how they bounce back from these two losses and from the style of play and from Lavin's comments. You know, will the guys come out and will they have a little bit more fire? Will they be a little bit more prepared? What's going to go on?
Yeah, both teams have a week to prepare, so practice makes perfect.
Practice does. And I'll also add that Sir Dominic Poynter made a comment about the team not being prepared or not executing the game plan. So, you know, all of those things are out there.
It sounds like what was being said, you know, during Rutgers out-of-conference losses, what Jordan and some of the players were saying. You know, we talked a little bit about it. It's a lot of basketball left. All right. Well, this was not half bad, the Back from Christmas Break edition. I don't know which episode this is.
It's episode 11, actually.
Episode 11. All right. So I am Dave of On the Banks, the Rutgers blog.
You can find him at onthebanks.com and also at Dave_White on Twitter.
That's right. Oh, I forgot.
Yeah.
And one more thing. I'm sorry. Before Norman closes us out, one more thing. On Tuesday, my first two books, When One Man Dies and The Evil That Men Do, are being re-released wherever ebooks are sold. They take place in New Jersey and in the Rutgers area. So if you're listening for that and you're interested, they're crime novels.
I hear
they'll
good.
Be out. They'll be out this week.
Exciting, exciting. Congratulations. A little
Thank
applause.
You. Yay.
And I don't have any books coming out or being reissued, but I am Norman of Rumble in the Garden. You can find me at EcoSpias on Twitter, or you can find the Rumble's full feed at RumbleSDN. We'll be back next week with more conversation about our two teams and maybe even another guest.
Yeah, maybe we can find somebody. So.
Oh, and if you have questions, reach out at nothalfbadpod@gmail.com. That's nothalfbadpod@gmail.com.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.